The special meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board of Directors will come to order. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag and country.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record show that four directors are present. Ah, here he is. Director Villeneuve has arrived. So we have all five members present, therefore we have a quorum. First item on the agenda is the consent calendar. Are there any items to be pulled from the consent agenda? Apparently not. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Could we have staff read through the consent agenda?
We can, after we get a second to the motion.
I'll second it.
The general manager will now read the consent agenda items.
Okay. Item 2A is to adopt Resolution 56-2005, authorizing award a contract for tennis court construction. And item 2B is to adopt Resolution 57-2005, authorizing the CCSD purchase of tax defaulted property, APNs, 023.214.022 and 024.261.010 for the purpose of resource conservation and lot reduction.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. We'll now have a public hearing to consider adoption of a resolution adopting a mitigated negative declaration for the purpose of geotechnical and hydrologic investigation activities project. Is there a staff report?
Yes, and I'll turn it over to District Engineer Bob Gressens and our consulting team.
Thank you, Tammy. Is this on? Can you hear okay?
Apparently so.
President Sanders, members of the board, we do have a PowerPoint presentation we're going to go through in addition to the staff, the written staff report in front of you. But before I start, I'd like to introduce some key members of the team assisting me on this project. Today we have Dave Kraska with Corolla Engineers, who's a project manager for us. We have Chris Vardis, also with Padre and Associates. They worked primarily on the initial study, mitigating neg deck, and a lot of the biological investigation work. And we also have Paul Sorensen here from Fugro. So I may defer to these gentlemen as questions arrive, possibly.
Thank you, Bob. Bob, apparently your microphone is not broadcasting. We're having trouble hearing you. Is it?
Okay.
Okay, maybe if you speak more directly into it. Thank you.
Okay. Per our recommendation outline, we'll present a staff report. We suggest holding the public hearing, soliciting comments. We'll recommend approving the environmental document, subject to any deliberations you have and the public comments we receive. And then adopting the resolution 55-2005. At this point, I'll go with the presentation, Carlos, if you could cue that up. And I'll need to borrow that pointer again. Okay. This item is the initial study mitigated negative declaration for the geotechnical hydrogeologic investigation, and it's for the pending desalination project. Next slide. Our outline today is just to give you the purpose of the initial study mitigated neg deck, an overview of the environmental clearance process that we're following, description of the data collection project, description of our public notification process, brief summary of the mitigation measures, and status of the permitting, and also open it up to questions that you may have. Next slide. The purpose of this project is to collect data. It's collecting the subsurface geological and hydrogeological information for assessing various subterranean intake and discharge alternatives. The data collected from this project will be used in developing alternatives that will in turn go into a detailed project description for the subsequent desalination project environmental impact report / environmental impact statement. So there will be a purpose of today's hearing on the initial study mitigated neg dec. Next slide, please. The data collection project consists of three basic phases. We have a phase one, which is the soil borings along the beach area and some geophysical testing we'll describe in more detail in some future slides. The phase two is groundwater monitoring wells and a seismic reflection survey. And then phase three is some inland soil borings. And another key element is a temporary ramp that I'll describe shortly. Next slide. Just to give you an overview of the area, and this is out of the initial study report, but I realize it's a little difficult to see some of the symbols at this scale. Thank you, Carlos. But the there's about seven borings that occur close to the surf zone along San Simeon State Beach. And just give everybody a frame of reference, this is Highway 1, and this is San Simeon Creek Road here. This is the San Simeon Creek and the lagoon area over here, campground area here. And this area we're referring to as the parking lot beach area. And so the access that you'll see shortly is going to come off a ramp at the parking lot beach area, kind of along its south edge here. That'll allow equipment that has to come down here to do some of the exploratory work, and as well as some of the personnel that'll come down there to monitor that. There's some inland soil borings in a few areas shown. It'll use more traditional drilling methods, and that is along some possible pipeline routes. All these can change some. I mean, just because it's drawn here doesn't mean we might move it. If there was a biological constraint or some other constraint, we could move these around some. Next slide, please. The phase one work involves a rotary sonic drilling method. That method provides very high quality samples. I showed one particular track mounted rig that fit on the back of a truck from a particular company. This drilling method is getting much more widely accepted and used in the industry. So it may not be this particular equipment, but it'll be similar to this. The samples are collected in kind of a tube that a person would open with a pocket knife. So you get these very high-quality samples, very representative. And it's a tough type of material to sample because we're trying to find some loosely compacted sand and gravels, and oftentimes they'll run out of the bottom of a sampling tube on a conventional type drilling system. Another nice feature about this methodology is there's no drilling mud required, so it's a much cleaner drilling method. But as we mentioned, the access will require use of a ramp. And after we do the drilling, the holes are filled and abandoned per permit conditions. Next slide. There's also, in phase one, what they call a cone penetrometer. The machine, this was just an example of a track-mounted machine. Some other alternatives that will be considered is taking a traditional, usually on a truck, and maybe pulling it with a bulldozer, a track-mounted bulldozer. It's used to assess the location of an underground saltwater wedge, and these are just probes pushed in the ground. Again, the ramp will be required for access of the equipment down to the beach area. Next slide, please. The ramp access was a key area of some of our earlier work. We evaluated several alternatives. We chose the ramp because of the it maximizes the avoidance of the snowy plover, and the snowy plover is a listed species that nest on a beach, and usually in the upper areas of the beach called a coastal foredune area. It relies on camouflage for its survival, so you have to be very careful that you avoid stepping on the nest. That's the reason there's a lot of roped-off areas on the beaches in the area to prevent dogs from going in that area, for example. The ramp also minimizes the visual impacts by allowing, you know, removal of the equipment out of the area after it's used. Next slide, please. This is just a view of the ramp in both aerial view. Again, this is the parking lot beach area here with the parking lot. And just at the very southern edge, there'd be some gravel placed here at the top of the ramp, and then it would go down to the beach area by 2 to 3 feet. If they're closer to the surf zone, we may actually have to bury them and cap them after we survey them, so we can go back and uncover them with a shovel and get samples on them in the future. They get left in place probably for at least a year's duration. There might be a technician out there every month or so, maybe every 3 months in certain times, to take samples and monitor levels. When they do that, they'll be bailing out the wells and getting a representative sample. So that might be, 3 to 5 gallons of water that gets bailed out. However, initially, there's a drawdown test that's very critical that we have to do. That involves putting a submersible pump in these wells, pumping them probably for at least 24 hours. There was a question about how long it could go maximum, and based on conversation I had with Paul, probably a worst case might be 72 hours, but in all likelihood it's going to be less than 24 hours. These wells are completely removed at the end of the investigation stage, so they'll be filled and abandoned, and there won't be any trace of them left at the end of the project. Next slide. There's a lot of discussion about the use of a mini sparker as part of the Phase 2 seismic reflection survey. And just to clarify a few points on that, there's a couple of ways this is used. The more traditional way is to tow it behind a boat in open water on a sled, where it sends off a pulse sound that's used to measure the ocean deposits. We're not doing that on this project. What we're doing is we're actually putting inside an encased well below ground and then having hydrophones or geophones along the floor of from the surf zone out about 1,500 feet maximum to measure these reflection of the sound waves. And they do get attenuated considerably by the time they get through the cased well and through the soil. And
what's the purpose of that?
I'm gonna let Paul answer that a little bit better, since he's more used to doing those analyses than me. Paul, can you?
I'm curious about the mini sparker. What does it do in this process?
I'm Paul Sorensen with Fugro. The mini sparker is just a means of emitting a wave that can be a sound wave or an energy wave that can be picked up by the geophones or the that are spread out along the surface of the seafloor. The purpose of the overall test is to describe the lithology between the cased well and the information that we have offshore from previous work years ago, when we actually drilled holes offshore into the subsurface.
Wait, you threw a word in there that went real quick. What was it? Something ethology?
Oh, lithology.
I have more than a sixth grade education, but what is lithology?
Sorry. Lithology is that's the description of the geologic formation or the sediments that make up the seafloor.
And the reason why you need that is you want to know if it can, if it can hold a building.
Well, on ground, when you're building buildings, yeah, you need to know the lithology or the makeup of the sediments to see if it that it would be stable for building, for the building. In this case, what we are looking for are conductive or the aquifers that will produce water, that will produce this seawater for the subsurface seawater intake for the desalination plant.
And
so, the makeup of the ocean, of the sediments beneath the ocean floor, could be clay, it could be sands, it could be gravels, or a mixture, or layers of those. And what we want to, what we need to find out is whether it's all clay, in which case it will yield very little water, or whether it's sand, or whether there's layers in there, and if there are layers, where the layers are. So these are tests that will help us do that without drilling a whole series of wells or holes that would be not only difficult and expensive, but certainly of a much greater impact.
Thank you.
Could I just ask a question? On the hydrophones, what sort of level are you able to detect?
I can't give you numbers.
Okay.
On ground, we oftentimes will just put a steel plate on the ground and hit it with a sledgehammer, and that level of noise is what we're picking up in the geophones hundreds and hundreds of feet away.
Yeah, I think that explains it. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Paul. I'll just add that we're definitely not pulling this unit out in the open water, and I believe that there might have been some concern related to that. Also, FUGRO is already permitted for the use of this device by the State Lands Commission. So the State Lands Commission has investigated this in the past. They're using a low enough energy system where it has been previously allowed by a state agency. Next slide, please.
Bob, could I just ask if you were not to use this device, is there any other way that you could obtain the information that you need?
Well, I think drilling would certainly be another way to go, but that would be, as Paul indicated, much more disturbing to the environment, and also much more difficult, because very difficult to work in the surf zone in particular with drilling equipment. We feel this is the least disruptive method to get good information with.
Okay. Thank you.
The phase three is pretty traditional soil borings inland. I know FUGRO's plan using conventional hollow stem augering, which is a methodology that is used all over for soil borings to gather samples with. They're located, as I mentioned earlier, along approximate pipeline routes. Again, these locations are not chiseled in stone. They can change some to avoid whatever features we encounter there with our mitigation measures. Next slide. Just to summarize our public outreach and our noticing on this project, on August 24th was when we did our original notice of intent to adopt. That gets filed with the county clerk's office, and they put it up on a bulletin board outside the county building. There's also 15 copies that are sent with a notice of completion form to the state clearinghouse. The state clearinghouse, in turn, is responsible for distributing them to the various resource agencies throughout the state. On September 8th, we added a newspaper advertisement in the Tribune to advise people of the upcoming meeting. That's not a requirement of CEQA per se, but we thought this was a sensitive enough project, we wanted to get the word out that way. We did have a little trouble getting it on our website, so we didn't get it on our website till about the 15th of September. We also did a summary presentation to the local chapter of the Sierra Club that same evening and introduced them to it. We didn't go to this level of detail. We then postponed the hearing on the 29th. There was a number of comments received about not having adequate review time, and so we re-advertised on October 1st in the Tribune about the new today's date as well as a revised close of comments that was at Monday, October 10th at 5 p.m. And so that brings us to today's hearing. Next slide. This is the state clearinghouse form. I know it's a very difficult one to read. I'll just skip over. But basically, we make our estimate of what agencies should be notified by checking boxes on the form. The state clearinghouse also adds its judgment to this and may add or subtract or whatever. But we send them 15 copies, and this is a routine part of the CEQA process in the state of California. Next slide. The mitigation measures, I won't go into the detail unless there are specific questions, but there are 16 biological mitigation measures that are described in pages 344 through 346. Some of that is pre-construction monitoring, training of the personnel on the site, having a biological monitor present, and so forth. Similarly, there's three cultural resource mitigation measures, having a qualified archaeologist on site, avoidance, those types of basic mitigation monitoring measures. There's a geologic mitigation measure related to making sure we're not eroding the cliff area and so forth, a hazardous spill measure, and then three wastewater mitigation measures. I'll add, too, that beyond this, when we go to get our actual permits, there's going to actually be some monitoring plans that will go beyond the initial study mitigated neg deck to satisfy the actual permits. Next slide.
Excuse me, Bob. But as I looked at the report, all of the boxes that had to be checked for the mitigation measures, there were none that were extreme, and the couple boxes were checked that some mitigation. Isn't that correct?
Correct. That I'm going to look a little bit to Chris to double-check myself on that.
Chris Vardis with Pottery Associates, firm that prepared the initial study mitigating negative declaration. When Pottery went through and analyzed all the potential environmental impacts associated with this project, we did not identify any significant and unavoidable impacts, i.e. no Class 1 impacts. Mm-hmm. We did identify Class 2 impacts, which are significant impacts or potentially significant impacts, but could be mitigated to a less than significant level through implementation and mitigation. In conclusion, all of the impacts associated with this project are mitigated to a level less than significance pursuant to CEQA.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There's no equipment staging on undisturbed portions of an archaeological site. There's no collection, removal, or unnecessary displacement of any artifacts that's allowed, and there's no removal of native soils. During the Phase 3 activities, we're going to have some controls in place at the hollow stem auger locations. We'll relocate those locations if anything is identified, and then we'll have, of course, a qualified archaeologist monitoring the operations. Next slide, please. The comments are attached as Exhibit A to the staff report that we received from various individuals and groups. And just to summarize them, most of them were dealing with the concerns over the mini sparker activity, beach access. One in particular talked about piecemealing by doing the initial study mitigating neg deck. There was a question about Army Corps' involvement, the cultural resource protection, and then some related to growth control. Next slide, please. Just on the piecemealing one in particular, we did look at that and paid close attention to it. Just a definition of that, it's the act of avoiding a project or dividing a project into smaller components to avoid or simplify the CEQA review process. And the purpose of this project, as I mentioned, is data collection so we can develop these alternatives, but there will be definitely a subsequent EIR, EIS that will, whatever we come up with from this data will be part of that study. Again, this data collection, we believe, is part of a study and not necessarily the project, but the
studies are routinely conducted prior to the preparation of EIR and EIS. Next slide, please. Some of the permitting that we're going through right now, and I might call on Chris again to help me out on some of the details. Again, their company has been doing the majority of this work in assisting us, but there's some with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. We have U.S. Fish and Wildlife. We're involved with the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. The California Coastal Commission will be doing the coastal development permitting, as well as the County of San Luis Obispo. And the delineation between the responsibilities is the mean high tide line, correct? So if you're below that line, you go directly to the Coastal Commission for its permitting. If you're above that line, it's through the county. So it looks like the majority of this is going to be going to the county. I didn't see a great deal below that mean high tide line the last time we had that surveyed recently. There's permitting with the California Department of Fish and Game, Regional Water Quality Control Board, State Parks has a right of entry, and I'm slipping now, Chris, on SHPO and what that stands for,
State Historical
Preservation Office. Okay, and the is that the State Lands Commission for the potential lease if we're below that mean high tide line, and I already mentioned the county. So all these things are in motion, various stages. They will, in turn, have specific permits of conditions that maybe go beyond this, as well as some more detailed monitoring plans that we have to prepare as well. Next slide. That pretty much concludes the fact that this is, again, a data collection work that's necessary to support our EIR, EIS, and you would be adopting mitigation measures to address the concerns that are raised. At this point, I will close, unless there were some further questions related to the staff report or this presentation.
Any questions of Mr. Gressens?
Just out of curiosity, so that whole list of permits have to be obtained before you start any of the beach well drilling?
That's correct. Some of these are in various states of progress. We had started, I think, back early part of this year. I remember a meeting in March, for example, at the county, which precipitated the need for this initial study, mitigated neg deck. So it's been going on for a while, and we're still forging ahead.
Wow. Any other questions of Mr. Gressens?
Yes.
Yes, Director Villeneuve.
Bob, is there a consultant on this on a project that has expertise in the coastal beach erosion and transport?
Yes, there is, and I'm going to let Dave respond to that question because he's assembled the team through.
Pardon me?
Corallo Engineers is the lead engineer, and their subcontractor is associated with that. I'm going to let Dave respond to that.
Hi, I'm Dave Krasko with Corallo Engineers. And specifically to address that issue, we have...
Yeah, okay.
But we're specifically staying away from the bluff, trying to protect all the existing features. And the future project, the proposed desal project, would have to address all of those issues related to beach erosion.
That'll become later.
Correct.
That should be some comfort or at least answer some of the queries I've read from the public that seem to be under the impression that there's going to be some drastic effect of the sound waves on species that are like, and I just looked at one comment, interfering with migration of the gray whale. I don't think they come that close to the shoreline. Unless they're dead. So thank you.
Any other questions of Mr. Gressens? Yes, Director Shaldicott.
Yes, Bob. Assuming the permits are in hand, what is your rough time scale for each of the parts of this project?
Well, we believe that constructing the ramp would be a day work, roughly. It might stretch into 2 days, potentially, but probably about a day's worth of effort to get that ramp installed. The initial drilling could be roughly 5 working days. Then
there would probably be a week or so time lag before the next phase of work would start, where that initial data is analyzed, and then have follow-up, probably a 2 to 3 day work period, and then followed by another lag time of some analysis, and then the final work maybe happening over a couple of days' time. We estimated the ramp would probably be there about a month, roughly, so that we wouldn't be taking it in and out all the time and disturbing that activity.
So
that
when the technicians are going down to examine the wells during the year or so, that they'll be just sort of walking down there and doing whatever they have to do.
That's right. Yeah, that they'll be just hand carrying what they need down there, yeah. And that will, of course, the wells will stay for a year right. After they're installed, and the ramp will be out of there by that time.
Thank you.
Two wells.
Thank you.
That's right. Any other questions of Bob Gressens? Thank you, Bob. This is a public hearing. Is there any member of the public that would wish to address the board on this matter?
Good morning, and thanks for the coffee.
Mr. Hawley, good morning.
My name is Richard Hawley.
Did you leave some money in the tip jar?
Sorry?
Did you leave some money in the tip jar for the coffee?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you again for that. And I want to thank Mr. Gressens for explaining that the mini sparkers weren't going to be dragged on the ocean floor, but rather put in a well. And I also want to thanks for the quick turnaround on the responses. And actually, I only had 30 minutes to review them, but I appreciate that. What I didn't have answers to in my list of questions. Were two things in particular, and one was the amplification of the mini sparker sound waves when they hit solid objects.
Rick, can you repeat that again? I missed the first part of your question.
Is this on?
If you'd speak more directly into the mic,
I will.
It would help. Thanks.
Is this better?
Much better.
Thank you. One of the questions I had asked in my response to the study was, what happens with the mini sparker sound waves when they hit solid objects? There's an amplification of sound waves, and in sand they're certainly dampened off, but when they hit solid objects, which there's quite a few of out there in front of the proposed site, what happens, and what happens with that, and what's the mitigation when it spikes over the threshold that they're trying to stay under? And the other question is, if they're, what type of bonding does the public have assurances of in case there is an accident, or in case there is a taking, or something unforeseen happens? Who's responsible for accidents, and what's the thread through that so there isn't legal entanglements with that? So those are two questions that weren't answered.
Can I respond
to that? Director Funky Blue.
Well, first of all, I really appreciate that a layperson is very sensitive to liability issues.
I learned that the hard way.
Yes. But I think it was answered, actually, because I read your letter seriously, as I do all of your comments to us. It's a balancing act, and I think it's a reasonable balancing act. Now, the other concern that I had when I read your letter, because I was... You educated me. I was not aware of it, was the noise issue. But and I realized you didn't have a lot of time, and neither have we. We just got this last night, the packet. But you talk about the noise concerns. And frankly, I'd never heard of that, and so I appreciate you making me aware of that. But then again, you don't provide any evidence either, and I think that was also addressed. You talk about anthropogenic noise effects on marine animals being a budding science, and that's your word, and heretofore has not been adequately studied. Well, my sense is, if it has not been adequately studied, is there any evidence to suggest that marine life will be damaged on any level? because of the noise coming from the mini sparkers. I don't see that in your letter. I don't know if that was your intent. I'm sure you have evidence, but I have not received any evidence, especially in light of what Bob said this morning, that the noise will be minimized given its, the casing and where it's going to be conducted. I don't see any evidence that any citizen has provided to us, not just you, but people with this kind of scientific background, that marine life will be damaged by the mini sparkers. And Fugo's experience with the permitting suggests otherwise. So that's why I think it's a good project, and I think we ought to go ahead. And I think that noise issue was addressed, but I think we all agree there's not that much data. I think your concern makes reasonable sense, but in my business, I always like to have evidence, and I just don't see the evidence, frankly, one way or the other.
May I respond?
Sure.
Well,
absolutely.
Since I'm not on trial here, and neither are you, I don't have to really bring the evidence to light. What I do need to do is question it, and I think that the good people at Padre know all about sound amplification, and it's not anything hidden or something ethereal out there. And I would like to hear their response to what sound amplification really is.
Rick, we'll have them come up and respond to both of your questions, as a matter of fact.
Okay, and I appreciate your thoroughness, Mr. Funky Balloon. I appreciate it.
When I said evidence, I don't mean evidence like in trial. Evidence that I need to make a good decision in my mind. And I hope you know this, but every time you've presented anything to us, I take it seriously. I think you're a major component of our community. And when someone like you presents issues, I take them real seriously, I inquire. So, no, I didn't mean to suggest that you're in trial in any way. I look forward to getting your comments. And this is not the first time you've educated me on an issue that I was not aware of. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you.
Director Villeneuve.
Yeah, the last paragraph of your Rick,
you're not done yet, Rick.
Still on trial, dude.
Exactly.
I would like your last paragraph there with concerns about the public lands. Is that still a problem with you? Considering the fact that this has been planned for some time, and I was absolutely bowled over with the state parks actually agreeing to this, but they have. They have agreed to this. In fact, it was several years ago.
Yeah, and I think in my letter, I wasn't objecting to it. I was wanting to make clear. I wanted it made clear to me that if there was some type of misfortune out there, whether someone gets hurt or whether there's a spill or whether there's a taking of sea life that wasn't intentional, if something happens out there, what's the thread of legal responsibility there? Who does the district get sued? Does the contractor get sued? Does the state parks sue the district? Does the state lands commission culpable here? How are we protected from being sued? Meaning the public, and you representing us.
We'll get an answer to that question, Rick, when we get through the public hearing.
Okay.
We're going to aggregate all of the questions, and then we'll get responses for you.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you,
Director Villeneuve. Through the chair, is that answer your question?
I'm not here to defend either side. I'm just delivering the message. And to bring to the attention of the board that in March of this year, the governor of the state signed the Sacred Lands Act, which gives Native Americans more rights, sacred rights, which are different than cultural or archaeological rights. So that's that message. Now I want to talk about notice. late. The notice that was given was in the Cambrian, not the Tribune. And that can be easily looked into, whoever placed the notice in the newspaper. I saw it in the Cambrian. I never saw, and in fact, I have the notice right here, two notices. Secondly, there are three lawyers right in this room that could look up the code sections in CEQA and find out what is proper notice. I can give you the code, the sections 15105, 15072, 15073. When the state clearinghouse is involved, notice is a little different. The length of time is extended. And also, what I read in the CEQA book is that the public is to have notice by newspaper. To put notice in San Luis Obispo County at the in the city, which is almost 50 miles away, and tape it to the door of a clerk doesn't seem to me to be adequate notice. CEQA, there are minimum standards for anything, but if you want the public to be involved, and that's the purpose of CEQA, public participation, let's do the maximum. So anyway, but thank you for extending the comment period by 2 weeks. I appreciate that. All right, now I want to talk about the ramp. Just reading from the book, I just pasted a few actual words. The ramp is not designed. What you see in the book is sort of a sketch. The ramp is going to be between 50 and 100 feet long. It's going to be between 12 feet and 16 feet wide. The beach, it's going to extend over a bluff that is very extremely fragile, going a little bit south down onto the beach, and the tide comes up to the toe of the bluff at certain times. I don't know if the consultants took that into consideration, but that's a reality. It says right out of the book, it says, the ramp will be designed by a licensed civil engineer. Well, there is no design right now. A winch system is proposed to winch the vehicles and equipment up and down the ramp. Now, that means there's a large crane up there. According to the book, some of the equipment can weigh up to 60,000 pounds. There are going to be ATVs, rigs, trucks, all kinds of vehicles. These are going to go down the ramp every day and then back up the ramp. So that's two trips. The winch will provide stability to the vehicles as they are raised or lowered on the ramp. However, the potential risk of upset impact from a tipped over piece of equipment is considered significant. And then they refer you to the mitigation. Well, there is no mitigation plan. So there is an expectation that one of these pieces of equipment is going to fall off of this ramp down onto the beach, and that there could be a spill of hazardous material. This seems crazy to me. I mean, I'm just a layperson, but when I read that, it just leapt out of the pages. There are alternatives to getting the equipment down. There have been suggestions in the comment letters to use these alternatives. So I wanted to bring that to your attention. All right. Thirdly, wanted to talk about the mini sparkers. There have been extensive studies on the mini sparkers. Mr. Funky Blue, did you read the Sierra Club comments? Did you have time last night to talk about the noise level? So the Coastal Commission has done extensive studies. The Navy, I don't know if the permit that has been given by, is it FUGO, also has a takings license, which means that there is an expectation that some of the mammals, marine mammals, will die, and therefore the license allows a certain number. So the mini sparkers are extremely serious, and the noise level, thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else here this morning that would like to testify on this matter? Seeing none, the public hearing is closed, and we'll now have Mr. Gressens take the podium, if you would, Bob, and kind of direct traffic here as we get answers from you and our consultants to all of the questions that have been posed. The first question that was posed has to do with the mini sparkers and what happens when the sound waves emitted by the sparker hit a solid object, and whether there are any mitigation measures designed to mitigate that circumstance.
Okay, I'm going to rely again on Padre as well as Fugro, but my understanding is the sound waves are intended to bounce off of bedrock, say, of the ocean floor, and they just reflect at that point. So I'm not totally sure I understood the question as far as when they hit solid objects. It was meant to talk about geological features, but I assume it was related to whether it was to maybe hit a marine organism or something to that effect.
I assume he means rock formations and that sort of thing. So let's have the consultant from Padre come up and respond to the question.
Chris Vardis with Padre Associates. Just want to point out two things for the record. I'm neither an acoustical engineer or a marine biologist. Furthermore, I want to point out that Padre Associates did not do a detailed acoustical modeling analysis of the use of mini sparkers in relation to impacts to marine wildlife. But I do want to point out that Padre Associates does have over 20 years of experience with onshore and offshore projects off the coast of California. Furthermore, the use of the mini sparker proposed for this project, it's a 2 kilojoule mini sparker. It's permitted by the California State Lands Commission, i.e., Fugro has a permit to use this type of device. Furthermore, that permit is within the California State Lands Commission's thresholds for the use of such device within open waters of the state of California, a 1,000-mile stretch of the coast from the mean high water mark to 3 miles out to sea. The use of this mini sparker for this project will be within those thresholds and within an encased well. So the magnitude of potential acoustical impacts is so much reduced than if it were in open water. Furthermore, I want to point out that when Fugro drills these wells, they're not drilling into solid bedrock. If they reach solid bedrock, they're going to stop drilling. So, in essence, the mini spark will be inside the well, will be operated or used. Sound waves will transmit outward. If they hit, they'll go through sand, which will attenuate the noise. There's a possibility that they may hit a rock, but that rock feature is most likely going to be isolated, which would further attenuate the noise. So, Potter Associates, we're very comfortable, and we stand behind our conclusions in the report that there's not going to be a significant impact marine wildlife. But to numerically come up with sound contours associated with that, we haven't done that type of work.
So what you're saying is if the sound waves emitted by the mini sparker hit a solid object, the sound waves would likely be attenuated rather than accentuated.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Bob, is there anything you'd like to add to the response to the mini sparker question?
I think it pretty well sums it up for me.
I have a question. As I understand it, mini sparkers can be used in open ocean water, or they can be encased in a well. If they're used in open ocean water, obviously the sound waves that are emitted would travel farther and probably with greater intensity. We are encasing the mini sparkers in a well casing, so the strength of the sound waves emitted by the mini sparker would be much less than if the mini sparker was used in open ocean water. Is that correct?
Yes, I feel that way. My experience with sound reflection survey was actually on a sewer relocation project we did 3 or 4 years ago, and that was where we took a small metal plate, put it on the ground, and hit it with a sledgehammer. Mm-hmm. And so I know from that experience, it doesn't take much of a sound energy for these geophones to pick it up, and they have to process it through a computer, some very complicated electronics involved, but they're very sensitive instruments to fairly low sound levels. So they make them that way due to the attenuation that's happening through the Earth.
And the testimony from...
But as standard practice, the district requires our consultants and our contractors to provide insurance that also covers the district in case there's any issue of liability. So if a problem or lawsuit comes out of the operations that do this testing, then and a suit is filed, then what we would do is turn the lawsuit over to the contractors and ask their insurance companies to cover us. If there is, for whatever reason, a dispute or some determination that that coverage does not exist, the district itself has coverage and defense coverage from $1 to defend the action and protect the ratepayers from any liability.
So, Mr. Montanen, and you're satisfied that we have adequate liability insurance coverage to address any liability issue that may arise as a result of this project?
That's correct.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from board members on the liability issue? The issue of adequacy of notice was raised. Again, I'm going to turn to Mr. Montanen. Have you looked at the notice that was given, and are you satisfied that we complied with the requirements of the California Environmental Quality Act with respect to notice?
Yes, and actually, as Mr. Gressen's pointed out, we went further than what is required and provided more notice and more time to be able to have people comment and participate in the process.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from board members on that issue?
How about the we have a...
Director Chaldicott.
We have a standard procedure for noticing, and I wonder if we should just reiterate what that is.
We can. The general manager or the board secretary like to respond?
Yeah, since Kathy Choate, our district clerk, is responsible for that, I'm going to let her, so I don't misspeak, okay, respond to that question about noticing and where the official posting places are.
Thank you. Our postings are done in three locations: at the district office at 1316 Tamsin Drive, Suite 201, and also at the Cambria Library, as well as here at the Vets Hall. There's a glass case outside the lobby of the Vets Hall. The notices for special meetings are 24-hour notice. Our regular meetings are 72 hours. And the notices are generally placed in the Tribune, as it was felt that distribution of that newspaper is more widely read than the Cambrian, although there have been times when we have noticed both papers in an effort to make sure that all readers are getting all the notices.
Thank you.
May I add one comment about
Yes.
our website, because that did come up in this. You know, we do our very best to keep things on the website and to post as soon as possible, but that is not an official posting place. We just try to extend our notice through use of the CCSD website.
Appreciate that. I'd also like to comment that Mr. Gressens and I were at a meeting on September the 15th with the Sierra Club, at which the at which Ms. Burton was present, and this project was rather thoroughly discussed at the meeting. So I think the district went out of its way to engage in community outreach on this project. Director Coben?
What the district clerk outlined was the notice for meetings. But in terms of a notice for a report such as this, when would that have the public? When should the public have been noticed for that?
Well, I think the general counsel responded that we complied with the California Environmental Quality Act notice requirements. Is that right?
No, I don't know if the consultant can remind me what the exact dates are, but there are different dates. You're correct that it should be posted. Does Fugro know the exact dates they post?
We have a slide that summarized that. We can go
back.
Yeah,
there was a slide which gave each of the dates, publication and the newspaper and otherwise.
I could cover that, and
if you'd like to, why don't you go ahead and do that?
To it, if needed. Maybe, Carlos, if we could cue up the PowerPoint again. I'm going to go to the PowerPoint and then to an overhead to try to answer that question. Let me point out which slide it is.
President Sanders?
Yes.
It's also noted in the resolution 55-2005, the noticing that was done on the notice of intent for the negative declaration, if that helps.
Let's pull that, we'll pull that slide up.
We're going to, that one there. Thank you. This just summarizes the key dates. This could manipulate our wonderful machine there to show the overhead. This is actually a summary of the agencies that we checked off on the box of the form. And you'll see, as we zoom in, for example, the Native American Heritage Commission was checked off on the box. State Lands Commission, Air Pollution Control District, Regional Water Quality Control Board. If we could just slide it over a little bit so I can get over here, Carlos, and this, thank you. Coastal Commission, Fish and Game, Office of Historic Preservation, Parks and Recreation, Caltrans. Those are some of the basic ones that we thought we should flag for the State Clearinghouse.
Bob, specifically public notice. Is there anything in the CEQA requirement that tells us a date when the public or our constituents would need to have been notified?
Yes, again, that's part of the posting process that happens at the county clerk's office and per Kathy Choate's description of the other locations in town.
Just the 72 hours or for a special meeting, 24?
For this meeting in
for
particular.
Yeah. But in terms of the public having the access to this document, is there a date, how many days the public has to have access to it?
Okay, I understand the circulation period is 30 days.
30 days.
For everybody. So
yes,
that's right.
And so did we meet? We met that.
Yes.
We put it in the library, the document itself.
Yes, we had it available at our district office.
At the 30 days.
Immediately. There was a delay in getting into the library, as people noted to us. That was another reason why we extended this period to further the review period.
I'm asking that because I think that's what Ms. Burton's question was, that she, as a public member, did not have access to it earlier. But we're saying we did meet that public requirement.
Yes, not only did we meet it, we exceeded it.
By extending
the comment
thank
period.
You.
Okay. And just to close the loop, Mr. Montandon, you're satisfied that the district met all of its legal obligations with respect to notice?
Yes, I am.
And thank you. Okay. The next issue that was raised has to do with tipping of vehicles as they're moving up and down the ramp that is proposed to be constructed. Can you address that, Mr. Gressens, and tell us whether there are any mitigation measures respecting that potential impact?
Yes, there's one hazard mitigation measure noted within the initial study mitigated neg dec. That addresses that, but there will also be follow-up response plans developed as part of the permitting process that go beyond that as far as level of specifics and detail. So that will be part of what we follow. The tipping, again, the use of track-mounted equipment definitely lowers that concern, and we're looking at using the track-mounted equipment. The winch is something that could be attached to a portable piece of heavy equipment. For example, you could put a bulldozer, just park it temporarily, have part of the winch attached to a heavy bulldozer for
The comment was made that the use of the winch would require a crane. Is that true?
Not on a daily basis. It may require a heavy piece of equipment to anchor the upper part to.
Right. And it isn't the fact that the vehicles will be tethered to a winch a mitigation measure? That is a safety, I assume that's a safety measure designed to keep vehicles from tipping.
That's correct. That adds to the safety. It also adds to their ability to climb out of that area at a fairly steep angle.
So the fact that the vehicles will be tethered to a winch in and of itself is a mitigation measure, isn't that correct?
Yes, I'm not sure we listed that specifically as a mitigation measure in the report, but it adds to the safety.
In practical terms, it is.
Yes, in practical terms.
Okay. The next issue that was raised has to do with the impact on elephant seals, and if I understand the question correctly, many times the profile of elephant seals when they're in the water is such that they're hard to detect, and there's a concern that perhaps boats and other equipment in the water may somehow interfere with them. Would you like to address that?
I can, although I will ask again Chris Vardis to speak to that, since they are the experts in this field and would be providing the biological monitoring people for this work. So I'm
going to contingency plan contained within the mitigation, contained within the mitigating negative declaration.
Right. The statement was made that there will be a ship 60 feet long in the water. Would you like to address that?
Paul Sorensen with Fugro. I don't know where that number came from, to be honest.
Neither do I.
And so I can't tell you how big our boat will be that will support the divers that lay the cables. It will be towed up here from Ventura. It won't come up through the waters. It will be towed up. It's not a big boat. It's a small boat that just supports the divers and the cables as they lay it out for the day's work. I don't know how long it is. I could get that number, but I don't know.
And again, the biologist will be present when that activity occurs, so that if there's any potential impact with the elephant seals in the area, he can identify the elephant seals and make sure that they're out of harm's way. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir. Furthermore, I want to point out that as part of this monitoring program, there will be a training session conducted with the workers to present to them the various species that may be identified or occur within the project area and convey to them and describe to them what their physical characteristics are. So not only will the marine biologists understand what these species look like and how to identify them, but that information will be conveyed to the workers so that they'll have some indication on those physical characteristics so that they can identify them themselves as well.
Thank you. I don't have any other questions in my inventory of questions that were asked. Does any other board member want any other issue addressed?
I would just observe that we did have a letter from the Saline Nation. Is that going to be responded to address their questions? I don't.
Let's turn to that.
I think it could be clarified.
It's in the response to comments. There is a response.
Page 10 of 12 is where
right.
I see it.
Sure. Bob, would you like to indicate the response and the response to comments to the Salina Nation letter?
Again, I'm going to refer to Chris Vardis, who did assist me in developing the responses to the comments. Chris, if you can.
Chris?
Cultural Resource Management Solutions, or Systems, a local archaeological consulting firm here in San Luis Obispo County.
Speak into the mic. Yeah,
is that better?
You're taller
That's better.
Than most of the speakers, so you're talking over
Speaking over the mic.
Maybe I should crouch.
There you go.
Cultural Resource Management Solutions, a qualified archaeological consulting firm here in San Luis Obispo County, prepared a Phase 1 archaeological survey report as part of the mitigating negative declaration. Several cultural resource sites were identified as part of that investigation. As to whether they contacted the Selenian tribe, I can't speak to that. But as part of the mitigating negative declaration, three cultural resource-related mitigation measures have been prescribed. All three of those pertain to conducting on-site monitoring during construction activities. And as part of that monitoring program, the Selenian tribe will be contacted. Furthermore, that monitoring will be conducted in accordance with the guidelines that tribe has identified in their response to, within their comment letter.
And as a general rule, the Native Americans are the ones who are actually doing the monitoring. Isn't that correct?
That's correct, sir. And it may be in a situation where they present conducted the monitoring in conjunction with cultural resource management systems.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Any other issues that board members would like to have addressed? Apparently not. Thank you, Bob, very much for a very thorough job. With that, is there a motion to move forward with this?
I think we should also thank our respondents. I think it was our public speakers put a lot of thought into it and obviously had a lot of information, and I think we should appreciate that, so thank you.
Yes, thank you on behalf of the entire board.
In response to your request, I'd like to propose to adopt a resolution 55-2005 authorizing adoption of a mitigated net.
Mahala Burton again. This is getting back to the boat. It's on page 3-41, refers to a 60-foot vessel. So I just thought I'd clarify that. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience wishing to address the board on a matter not on the agenda? Seeing none, the public comment period is closed. Meeting is adjourned.